Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, May 5th. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today is physical therapist Matthew Goodemote of Goodemote Physical Therapy to tell us about body maintenance, stretching, and pain relief in these warmer months. If you have a question about an ache or a pain, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can reach out via email, voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. Physical therapy, Matthew Goodemote, and your calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call and talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today is physical therapist Matthew Goodemote. Matthew is one of 350 spine specialists that holds his diploma from the McKenzie Spine Institute International. He and his staff at Goodemote Physical Therapy provide a whole body approach by offering a blend of exercise-based therapy and manual therapy. Goodemote Physical Therapy offers small group strength training for osteoporosis, fall prevention, and athletic performance, and their programs are designed to prevent injury and to improve your performance in sports and recreation. So if you have a physical therapy question, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. And Matthew Goodemote, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Ray.
How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Well, great to
have
you.
It's rainy up here, but...
Yeah, it's maybe, you know, I know you're probably a health nut and you get out there and run either way, but, you know, it's a good day to sit down too, right?
Heck yeah. I don't run in the cold anymore, Ray. It's too cold in the wintertime. I'm a fair weather runner.
Fair enough. Well, it's probably good for your joints. This is from Martha in Hadley. Martha writes, I'm 64 and very active, but I'm dealing with a trigger thumb for the second time. I had a cortisone shot in November 2020, and by March 2021, it was back. What can I do? I baby it and brace it. It makes it feel worse when I brace it. Help. And that's from Martha in Hadley.
Well, one of the things that I do with a trigger finger or trigger thumb is quite a bit of manual therapy to try to break up some of the tissue restrictions. So basically, there's a restriction on the tendons that lead to this condition, and cortisone often can alleviate a lot of the symptoms.
Yeah.
But we tend to do some manual therapy. So it's hard to do to yourself, especially if the other thumb is not strong,
because
it can cause some pain in the opposite side. But that's what we do. And then I always, with hands, do just basic hand exercises, trying to make sure you have as much motion in the joints as well as the tissues around the joints.
Now, what is trigger finger exactly?
Well, there's some restrictions that happen in the tendons. There are different reasons for it. And essentially what happens is the tendon gets a constriction to it, and it creates a tension that pulls the tendon into a closed grip kind of position.
Yeah.
So it's not something we see often in my particular clinic, because we don't do hands. So you can go to an occupational therapist or a physical therapist that's a hand certified, and they deal with this on a regular basis, and there definitely are things you can do.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Matthew Goodemote is our guest today. It's physical therapy on Vox Pop, and we'll get right to the phones. Beth in Holyoke. Beth, you're on. Or not. Hello, Beth. Oh, God. Beth is on the International Space Station. All right, try it again, Beth. We're losing your signal on the dark side of the moon. Polly in Kerhonkson. Polly, you're on.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a problem with femoral nerve pain, and what can I do to help alleviate it? And I've been thinking about the cortisone shot. How long would a cortisone shot provide relief?
Well, there's a few things here first to make sure that it definitely is the femoral nerve. So this is the opposite of the sciatic nerve. So the femoral nerve comes in the front of the thigh, the sciatic goes down the back. So the femoral nerve would mean that the spine levels 1, 2, and 3 could be involved. And so there's often exercises you can do to alleviate the pressure on nerve roots. in the lumbar spine. And so there's a series of movements and positions that I would try before doing much of anything else. However, there's other possibilities of what can affect that femoral nerve due to its location and what's nearby it. So there's one weird condition where it's these superficial nerves, and it's due to tight-fitting clothes, and it will have a similar distribution of symptoms. And it's not so much pain as it is like a numbness type of thing. And that's a simple solution. Don't wear tight-fitting clothes and do a little bit of manual therapy around the area. And that one resolves fairly quickly. And there's also possibilities that it's actually coming from the hip joint itself, and that the pain referral is from that the front joint going down into the thigh. So the most important part is to...
Go ahead, Polly.
I've had some situations where I was walking down steps, say, and suddenly it feels like my leg will not support itself.
Yeah. The only thing I'm saying is that it's important to make sure that it is coming from the spine. Number one, it's not a very common condition. I definitely have treated people where that was the case, and definitely going downstairs is a risk. You would want to make sure you're holding on to a railing. But there's other reasons to have the leg feel like it's giving way besides the spine. So if you haven't had any lower back pain and you haven't tried any exercises for the back specifically, that's a starting point. Because if you go in and get a cortisone injection to that area and it's not even coming from the area, then obviously you won't have success. And it's not the kind of thing that you can rely completely on an X-ray or MRI for, because an X-ray and MRI are meant to confirm what you see in the clinic. So an MRI, most people have changes to the discs in the back. In fact, 70% of all people have changes to the disc in the back. So just getting a change on an MRI does not confirm the diagnosis. What confirms it is going through a more thorough evaluation where you're evaluating the spine, you're evaluating the hip, and then you're doing strength tests. Because if you have strength weakness in, let's say it's the quadriceps, well, there's different reasons for that. Some people with a swollen knee have weakness in the quadriceps. So it really is a little tricky. And I was just trying to point out that there's other possibilities, and you have to kind of go through those different scenarios. Because if the only symptom is going downstairs and occasionally where it feels weak, and you've never had lower back pain, boy, I wouldn't think it's coming from the spine. I would start someplace else. No.
Yeah, I have had lower back pain, and that is not the only symptom. The muscle on the front of my thigh very often just hurts like the dickens.
If I try
to lift my leg, as if heading up a stair, that is very painful.
Right, and it can be coming from the spine. I'm not saying that it's not. I'm just saying that if it is coming from the spine, then there's often movements and positions for the spine that can help to alleviate it without a cortisone. So the typical reason for a cortisone is constant pain. Constant means that there is inflammation in there. So if it's intermittent, coming and going, then it means there's a position or a movement that you're doing that's provoking it. And by identifying that, we can do an exercise, either a stretch or a specific exercise, to take the pressure away from the nerve root. And that goes into answer your question about how long the cortisone will last. If it's not inflamed, it won't. It won't last at all, because inflammation is what causes it, and you have to distinguish between those things.
Polly, we got to let you go, but thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Matthew Goodemot is our guest. It's Physical Therapy Today. Let's grab one more before our first break of the day. Susan in Schenectady. Susan.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
I diagnosed myself with piriformis syndrome about 5 or 6 weeks ago, because I know that part of my anatomy and the various stretches have been very hurtful to that muscle. And I had the accompanying sciatica down my leg, and I have been treating it on my own for about 5 or 6 weeks, and it has greatly improved, it's still very painful, and I can't do that, that crossover stretch where you rest your ankle on the top of the opposite leg, and without it really hurting. And I was just wondering if that indicates something so bad that I should go to the doctor, if I need to be more patient.
Well, first, if you're having any pain above where the piriformis is, so the piriformis, just for anybody who's not sure, is a muscle that's in the buttock area, and it's mm-hmm. often blamed for sciatica. And if you've had any mm-hmm. lower back pain, then it's not piriformis syndrome. So piriformis syndrome mm-hmm. is a very rare condition, even though it's talked a lot mm-hmm. about on the internet. And the piriformis syndrome is one of those conditions that I've treated hundreds of times by not touching the piriformis and just working on the lumbar spine. So that's the first step mm-hmm. is to make sure that if you've had back pain, then you can eliminate piriformis syndrome and just go right after the back. And the reason for the prolonged symptoms is similar to what I was just saying to the other caller. If you're attacking the piriformis, but the problem's coming from the lumbar spine, you're going to be met with minimal success. And so doing the piriformis stretch is okay. It's safe. It's fine to do. But if the issue is above that, then you have to address what's above it. And then the other thing is, if it is piriformis syndrome, then it often actually needs strengthening to build the muscle up. And there's a variety of different exercises. And that would depend on the level of pain you're having and the range of motion and things you have. And then the final thing I'd say is that most things that sciatica-related symptoms, if they're going to resolve on their own, they typically do that in a 6 to 8 week time frame. And so if you're a couple more weeks out and it just doesn't seem like it's getting anywhere, it would be a good idea to get it evaluated. You know, I'm a physical therapist, so I like physical therapies and evaluation.
Thank you. Can I just quickly ask, when I do the piriformis stretch, I can only get mm-hmm. about like a third of the way before it's painful, primarily like in the trochanter area. Where I'm feeling a pain. Is that still indicate the lumbar spine if that's happening?
The big criteria for the lumbar spine is if you've had low back pain, then I would go there. As far as the piriformis.
Okay, no, not really.
The symptoms of piriformis typically are right by the piriformis, which is more in the middle area. And the outer part you're talking about are different tendons. And there are times that it's the hip joint that's limiting your motion, not even the piriformis.
Hey, I'm sorry. We're going to have to take
You
finish it up, Matt, and then we're going to have to take a quick break. We're overdue here. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
Ray needs to take a break. I appreciate your help.
Around there that you're welcome.
That's funny. Yeah, the underwriters need to take a break. We'll take a break. 800-348-2551, as long as we're all agreed on that. It's Matthew Goodemode. It's Physical Therapy Today, and we'll be back or not. Fox Pop on WAMC Physical Therapy Today with Matthew Goodemote. The number is 800-348-2551. And Jim writes, I have ongoing pain in the soft tissue areas between the mid-level right rear ribs, especially when I bend down to the right. Also painful when I try to lay on my left side. I'm considering whether I should get an ortho eval to see if any PT would be indicated. My chest x-ray of this area indicates no organ or vascular issues. And that's from Jim.
There's a few different muscles in that general vicinity. So it can just be simple muscles between the ribs, and they benefit from manual therapy type of things and learning how to breathe and then just basic exercises for range of motion. The thoracic spine will often refer pain in that area, and it'd be similar to like what a sciatica is, except it's coming from the thoracic spine. And typically, extension motions of the thoracic spine help that the most. The time frame of it is really what would indicate whether it's time to get assessed or not, because if it's been more than 6 or 8 weeks, absolutely.
Okay.
Generally speaking, these type of things need to get looked at if it's been more than a few weeks.
This one's from Roxanne. Roxanne writes, I was diagnosed with patellofemoral syndrome in my knees about 12 years ago. Now I have also arthritis in both knees. The stiffness in my knees and leg muscles, it's getting worse and worse, especially while sleeping and when I get up. My quad muscles are so tight, which seems to make it worse, but I can't find a way to stretch them without hurting my knees. Any way to improve the stiffness and tightness? I'm in my early 70s, and that's from Roxanne.
So the knees cartilage, So arthritis is a degenerative condition, and then it has inflammation. So the patellofemoral syndrome is often caused by a roughening of the cartilage underneath the kneecaps and or a weakness in the quadriceps.
All right.
So oftentimes people are looking for stretching to resolve these things, and it's strengthening that is the most important thing. Mm-hmm. But with arthritis of the knee, the first thing is to make sure you don't have any swelling and to get as much range of motion in the joint as possible. And then the second thing would be to work on strengthening. As far as stretching goes, I would work more on just joint range of motion, so making sure the knee can straighten all the way and can bend all the way, and then go to strengthening.
Okay, this one is from Nan in Wilton, and Nan writes, I have involuntary foot movement in both feet as side effects of med I no longer take. Doc says mini press to reduce, but it continues. It causes tightness in small muscles, tendons in the back of both calves, pain in bottom of the right foot, and where it connects to the knee. Any suggestions on how to reduce or type of treatment to keep up with this nasty business? And that's from Nan in Wilton.
It is really tricky when it's medicine-induced because oftentimes there's not great solutions other than time. But I would try doing some foam rolling on the calf muscles,
yeah,
and or having a manual therapist work on them. And then doing some basic general exercises, including just balancing on one foot. That works the intrinsic or the little tiny muscles in our foot. And then doing some basic strengthening for the calf muscles. But my little rule is it's mobility first and stability or strength second. So I start with the range of motion and make sure the ankle and foot joints can work properly. And then I go to the soft tissue next and make sure that's moving. And at rest, the muscles should be relaxed. And oftentimes I'll find people at rest have a lot of tension in the muscle. So that's why I start there. And then once the joints are moving well and the muscles are moving well, then it's strengthening them. But the reality is when it's caused by medicine, oftentimes there's not great results or solutions. Certainly worth trying, but I wouldn't have my hopes up.
Okay. Matthew Goodemoto is our guest. Physical therapy today on the program. Back to the phones we go. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. And now we go to Chris at Housatonic. Chris, you're on.
Yeah, Matthew, I got a problem. Every time I get up, and I've been noticing it, it's in my left lower foot underneath my walk, and it's like a pain, and it hurts when I get up to walk. And I don't know what it's coming from, Matt.
So two things. One is anytime you're in a prolonged position, when you first initiate some type of weight bearing or stepping, it's common for there to be a stiffness and even sometimes some discomfort. And so if it dissipates really quickly, like within a few steps, it gets better and better, then there's not a whole lot to worry about with that. But the most likely the source of it is coming from a few different possibilities. So on the bottom of the foot, we have muscles, and those muscles go to our toes and help to grip. And then we also have muscles that start in our calf and go down past the ankle into the foot, and they help to control the movement of the foot. So oftentimes when people are experiencing that type of discomfort, they can have some either weakness or some tightness in those muscles. And the best way to improve that is to do exercises for it. And the other possibility is the joint themselves. And as we get older, we begin to get degenerative changes. And in the foot, it's common for people to get some degenerative changes that can even turn into arthritis, which would also be irritable when you first start to step, having been sitting for a while. In that case, the solution is very similar. It's movement that helps joints. It's movement that helps muscles. So something simple while sitting is just to move the foot up and down all around and see if that helps when you first stand up on it.
Chris, thanks a lot for the call. Matthew Goodemo joins us today. It's physical therapy at 800-348-2551. Herman in Hyde Park. Hello, Herman.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a question, a two-part question. I'm having a partial knee replacement on the back of my right knee next week, and I wanted to find out when will I – I'm a very physical. I do HVAC and a very physical job. when will I be back to work? I mean, I know I have to do about 2 months, they said, at least, of physical therapy. And when will I be like 100% or close to it, you know, where I can do some, you know, heavy lifting and work again?
Sure. So the big criteria after any type of knee replacement, whether it's partial or total, in fact, after any knee surgery, it's all about the swelling and range of motion in the beginning. If you come out with a lot of swelling, it's going to inhibit your ability to get the range of motion back and to do strengthening exercises. So you have to prioritize getting rid of swelling, which means elevation. Elevation is not just above the heart. That's if you're having a cardiovascular event. If you're doing it for elevation of the knee, you want your foot pointing towards the ceiling. So I recommend people lay on the couch with their foot up on the back of the couch. So assuming that you don't have a lot of swelling, then the range of motion is next in line. And you want to try to maximize the range of motion in the first couple weeks, because that will allow you to do the strengthening that will get you back in the game sooner. So it's a bit of a trick question for me, because if you have a lot of swelling and don't have motion, you're going to spend the first month to 6 weeks getting that back, and that will delay your outcome. So if you want to make sure you have a good outcome as quickly as you can, minimize your swelling, elevate 3 times a day for 20 minutes at a time at least, and work on range of motion exercises every hour until you have maximum motion bending and maximum motion straightening for that knee. And then with strengthening, I would generally focus the first week to 2 weeks on the motion and the swelling with very low level strengthening. As soon as I didn't have swelling, I had good motion, then I would start to strengthen. And it's totally dependent on you and how the knee is feeling. You can't push it too fast, because that will cause swelling and slow you down. If you don't do anything, you won't be strong enough. So a general time frame for a partial knee is going to be, the fastest is going to be 6 to 8 weeks. That's the 2 month mark. That would be unusual to be 100% at that point. Closer to 3 months. I have had patients in the 6 to 8 week mark that are close to 100%, but more closer to the 3 month mark. And again, it all depends on the swelling and how that goes in the first couple weeks.
Thank you for being so clear. I really appreciate it. Thank you, doctor.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot. Matthew Goodemoto is our guest today. You're not a doctor though, right?
I am not. I'm a master.
You're okay. Fair enough. All right. Let's go to Liz in Amherst. Liz, you're on.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Nice to have you here.
Thank you. So I am trying to figure out something that is odd, but not painful. When I wake up in the morning, I'm often on my back. And when I do wake up on my back, the right side, the outside of my thigh, from my knee to my hip, is completely numb. Like, I can touch it, and it feels like, you know, touching something else. Yeah. And as soon as I roll over to the side, it goes away.
Wow.
Yeah. So when we're sleeping at night, the discs in our back are filling up with fluid. And so when you're in a recumbent position, this is why astronauts get taller as they go into space, because there's no gravity there. And so anyways, the discs fill up with fluid, and it can create pressure on it. On the nerve roots. And when you're in a supine position, we have like a little bit of a curve in our back, most people, due to our butt being a certain size and allows for a little lordosis in the lumbar spine. And so the combination of those two things is probably why you're having those type of symptoms on that lateral thigh. It has to do with the posture of the pelvis. And so when you get onto the side, you're just changing that posture. For some people, it's the opposite. If they lay on their sides, they get that. And then just going onto the back will alleviate it. But usually it has to do with a posture or position of the pelvis / lumbar spine.
Okay, so it's just, and resting on a nerve then?
Well, it may be, but it could just be because you're in a prolonged position. And with that posture, so it's a little bit of a myth that we pinch nerves. So the nerves in our lower back, they are free-floating. So about our first lumbar vertebrae, the spinal cord stops, and then the nerves float, and they call it cauda equina, which means horse's tail. So to actually pinch a nerve root, it requires quite a bit, a major herniation or some type of degenerative problem or a bony abnormality. So most people aren't actually, quote, pinching a nerve. Mm. What they're doing is it's just an irritant. The disc material can put some pressure in that general vicinity, take up space,
and that can be enough to create this symptom down the leg. A true pinched nerve that's being compressed would be constant. It would be highly unusual for it to be intermittent. So it would be literally 24/7. But it essentially amounts to that it comes and goes, it's fine. Yep. As long as it comes and goes, it's fine.
Yeah, that was what I was going to say. As long as it goes away, then I have nothing to worry about. All right. Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, Liz. We appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Matthew Goodemote is here. Physical therapy is the topic. Let's go to lovely Hartford, Connecticut. Greg, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
Mr. Graff, you don't have to worry. I'm on the bright side of the moon, so we shouldn't be interrupted.
You know, there really is no dark side of the moon, and I was waiting for someone to call and complain about it. But that's another show. Go ahead, Greg.
I have a diagnosis. Who knew? I have been diagnosed with a floating rib. I'm 71. I'm very active. I swim every day. I walk. My internist has pretty much said it's going to go away. The pain has not increased. It's slight, and it only presents itself pretty much at night for discomfort. And I was checking to see if PT or chiropractic might be a solution.
Hey, Greg, before Matthew answers, what the hell is a floating rib?
I'll let the master explain that to you. Who knew?
All right, man. All right. Matthew, what is that?
So, well, I was curious to make sure that it really is that. So we have floating ribs, which the last two ribs on our rib cage don't actually attach to our sternum. And so they're, quote, floating ribs.
Wow.
So I'm not really sure what the doctor was talking about with that, because everybody has floating ribs. It's not an unusual thing. And I don't know if they're referring to, there's times where the rib comes into the thoracic spine, that there can be, it's like a subluxation. It's not quite in the right socket, right in the right space, and that will often cause pain. So I'm guessing that's what he's talking about, in which case both physical therapy and chiropractic, we work with those type of things. So I guess it's more, I'm just not positive that what the diagnosis is, because again, everyone has a floating rib. So for me in my practice in McKenzie method, we often start just with the spine itself and don't evaluate the ribs per se. So I would check his thoracic spine to see how that's moving. And oftentimes you can do movements and positions for the thoracic spine that can alleviate the pain. And so that's where I would start. I would go after the location of symptoms, and based on where that is, I would do repeated movements or sustained positions to take the pressure off where the pain is, to alleviate the discomfort and restore any lost motion, and then teach that as an exercise for home.
You want to follow up, Greg?
That's wonderful, Matthew. In your professional opinion, would I be better off with a physical therapist or somebody who practices a chiropractor?
Well, that's a loaded question for a physical therapist. Exactly. What do you think, Matt?
It's a trick question. So honestly, I do feel like if you have a physical therapist that is treating spine on a regular basis, like this, I see our practice sees 70% spine. So we're general orthopedists, but we see a lot of spine. So in that kind of setting, then yes, physical therapy is the way to go. But there are practices that their main thing is going to be, you know, seeing joint replacements or something. So a physical therapist that primarily seeing joint replacements, it's not that they didn't get the training, but they don't do it a lot. And so it really is going to depend on something like that. And I also, just like every profession, there's really good chiropractors and there's really not great chiropractors, just like every profession. So it's a difficult question to answer without knowing which chiropractor you're talking about. Which
no names, please. Yes, don't do that.
Yeah. No. Yeah, exactly. So.
Go ahead,
well,
Greg.
You helped me an awful lot. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Stay healthy.
Hey, Greg, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. Matthew Goodemote is our guest today. What do you think, Zach the engineer? Break or no break? He says break. We'll take a quick break, if that's okay with everybody, and then we'll be back, and we'll take more calls and emails and yada, yada, yada. We'll be right back. Zach, the engineer, you know what TV show this was from? Remember? Any idea? You can turn your mic on if you want. Oh, you can't, I guess. Mannix. 1970s show Mannix. That's Lalo Schifrin. It was not on the tip of your tongue, sir. This is Vox Pop. It's not a music show, but what the heck. 800-348-2551 is the number. This email from Ann. And by the way, just a note. Whenever I fill in on the roundtable panel, you know, there's a standard spiel, you know, don't include abbreviations. And I never say that here, and I should. There's a couple reasons. One, my eyesight isn't very good. And two, I don't read very well. English is barely a third language at this point. So if you can spell it out, we're better off. But this one's from Ann, and I think I have it figured out. I had a right knee replacement a long time ago, and all is fine, but my right hip is giving me trouble from time to time. I'd love to avoid a hip replacement. Is there anything I can do to help my hip? And that's from Ann.
So the hip depends on where the hip is. So oftentimes the layman's term for hip is actually the back.
Oh.
So the hip joint would typically be the groin or the inner thigh area, and sometimes really deep in the buttock area. Whereas the hip, when we point to it, again, in layman's term, is often coming from the lower back.
Yeah.
And in both cases, you can do things. Number one is to identify which one it is, first of all. And then second of all, it would be to get as much motion and maintain as much motion as possible. One of the most common things I see, and I go out and do talks in the community, and I talk about how when people have degeneration or arthritic conditions, they start to avoid using the joint. But cartilage gets its nutrition through movement. So if you don't move it, you lose it even more. So inactivity can speed up the process.
Interesting.
On the other hand, if you overdo things, which means you ignore it as it's going, like, so if you're going for a walk and your hip is getting worse and worse as you go, and you kind of just out of frustration keep plowing through, then you can irritate it to the point where now you regress again. So it's this happy little space in the middle. Do something, but not so much it gets worse.
Interesting.
And the only way I like to be very strategic, so I try to use time where you're walking for 5 minutes, for example. And then when that doesn't bother you, walk for 7 minutes and then to 10 minutes and just every couple weeks progress a little bit further. That way your joint tolerates it much better. And then the last thing is more and more we're seeing from the research that strengthening helps joints. So it's range of motion, circulation, blood flow. And then number two is the strengthening. So those would be the things that I would focus on for the hip.
Physical therapist Matthew Goodimo joins us on the program today. Back to the phones we go at 800-348-2551. Jim is in Adams, Massachusetts. Hello there, Jim. You're on.
Hello there. Let me take you off speaker here.
Great.
Okay. Yes, I have a question for the master. 13 months ago, I fell off a ladder from a 5 foot height, but on a concrete floor. The ladder failed under me real quick, and I fell on my left. I have three fractures in my pelvis, two interior and exterior pubis, pubic ramus, and the ilium as well. They're non-union fractures, non-displaced, but non-union. And the healing that has happened, that's going to happen at this point, is fibrous rather than bone to bone, calcium calcification and fibrous union. I have extreme pain. I was in physical therapy for many weeks afterwards, and I was being treated as if I had a hip injury. I have excellent range of motion, and when I'm not under load,
yep.
I cannot bear weight. Is there any treatment for the pain? I know I'm not going to get any better. I've been taking Pilates classes to try and strengthen the core around there, but is there anything just to deal with the symptoms of the pain, a cortisone injection or anything like that?
So there's things that can be done
just
for sure.
My own weight is impossible, but I can ride a bicycle.
Yeah. So you want to build this up, and to answer the question with that number of fractures, it's not uncommon for this to take months to get better. So oftentimes people have a false expectation because the bony part is done that it's now as far as it's going to get.
Yeah.
There's lots that can be done, and it's a progression of strengthening where right now you can't put full weight through the leg, but I would start you with doing things to get partial weight through the leg. For example, sitting down in a chair and standing up. When you stand up with 2 feet on the ground, you're only putting 50% weight through there. If that's still too much, then you just stagger your stance a little bit and put the weaker leg forward. And so the good leg takes more of the load. And then working on building that up and doing strengthening. So you start with 5 repetitions and work up so you can do 20 repetitions in a row. Once you can do that, you move the foot back closer. So you take, instead of 40%, you take 45% and then work to 50%. And then you start to change the foot position. So the weak leg now is in the back and the strong leg is in the front. And now you're doing 55, 45, that kind of thing. And then you get to the point where you can do this type of movement, and it's only for a second that you're on weight bearing on it. But that's the beginning of how this will start to progress for you, because the muscles will absorb some of that force and allow you to take more load through the involved side. And then what you would do is start to load it with weight while doing just that exercise. And you kind of keep building it over weeks and weeks. And as far as other exercises, the pool would be a no-brainer. Getting in the water as soon as you possibly can, getting things
I can't deal with chlorine, but there is a pool half an hour away from me that has a salt water.
Yeah,
there's a salt water pool, and they are opening June 1st, and I'm going to be there opening day. I am an excellent swimmer, and it's the best exercise in the world.
So I treated a woman that got knocked down escalators and had a very similar story with the fractures and the weight bearing. And I started her off with 2 hiking sticks or 2 canes where you can put a lot of weight through. You might be starting with a walker where you put some weight through it and you start to shift that. And then all the soft tissue around the pelvis needs to be worked on to make sure it's nice and mobile. Because while you were healing, some of that tissue got caught in the healing process, which can lead to quite a bit of pain. So getting that nice and mobile and keeping it mobile and then building your strength and gradually doing the weight bearing. But the main thing, the main emphasis to stress to you is this takes a long time with those kind of fractures. Because it is still possible. Oh. Don't lose hope of that. But just understand, I've had people, it's been literally years, but they're walking now. And so it's the kind of thing, persist, get in the water, do as much strengthening as you can. Pain-wise, oftentimes things like massage therapy, acupuncture, stuff like that can help to reduce some of the pain to allow you to do more exercise.
Jim, thanks a lot for the call. We go to Newburg, and Carol is on. Carol, go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
I would like to know what you suggest for a frozen shoulder. I've had some chiropractic treatments. He's discouraged that it's not moving faster. I think that it is. He's massaging the ends of the rotator cuff at the chest and the back.
So the frozen shoulder, by definition, it means it's or the medical term is adhesive capsulitis. So the adhesive part is it's sticky and the capsule is in the shoulder joint itself. And so what happens is that tissue can get tight and painful. So like adhesive tape. So number one is, according to research, cortisone shot followed by physical therapy range of motion is the thing that is the most effective if it is a true frozen shoulder. The true frozen shoulder part is there's times where it's being diagnosed with that, but there's another condition. We have a patient right now that was diagnosed it, and one of my therapists has been working on her bicep because the bicep, the long head, goes into the shoulder joint itself. And so he's doing some manual therapy to the bicep tendon and then doing exercises that are strengthening to help control that bicep. The specific movement's not worth telling you about. But anyway, so the first part is to make sure it is truly an adhesive capsulitis. And then cortisone followed immediately with physical therapy has been shown to be a very effective way to treat that. But if it's not a true frozen shoulder, then it's identifying if it is the rotator cuff and the chiropractor's working on those muscles. Manual therapy is a good start, but you have to get into strengthening too. So it really depends to make sure that is the true diagnosis. And if it is, cortisone with physical therapy, range of motion, and then part two would be strengthening.
Thank you so very much. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Carol, thanks a lot for the call. We're joined today by Matthew Goodemote. It's Physical Therapy Today. Rowan is in Middlebury. Rowan, you're up.
Yeah, my question is regarding a foot injury when I was a youth and has translated into persistent back pain. I was told I could get the joint in my big toe fused to try to address it, but I still can't walk flat-footed on my left side. Wondering, is there some type of therapy to deal with the back pain caused by walking funny on my foot?
Absolutely. So there's things you can do absolutely to help the lower back pain, to calm that down. And as far as the gait goes, if it was coming from that big toe, then the most common time you would feel it is while walking, the back pain. So if you're having back pain while you're sitting, obviously you're not putting weight through your foot, so something else is going on. And although it can be triggered from walking in an unusual way, you mentioned having this as a kid. And so usually when you have things that develop as a kid, your body has adapted quite well to it. And so I believe, and my training says that if the back is being caused by the big toe, then it's going to be caused while walking. And if you're not getting most of your pain while walking, I start to think something else is going on. Now, it doesn't mean it's not the big toe too. It could be more than one thing happening. And the second thing that's happening, absolutely, you can resolve and then deal with the foot. But to have that as the explanation for the back and to not do anything about the back, I absolutely think you can do something about the back. There's really no doubt in my mind.
Is, as you describe, during walking, running, any type of upright exercise.
Yeah, but so right then, if it would be while you're doing those things. So if you're walking and you physically stop, the pain should go away immediately. And if it doesn't, then it's not just the big toe causing it. I get that you're walking and limping, or your gait is different, but you had it when a kid, so it's been different for years. And most of those cases, so just to give an example, there's people that have big leg length differences. We're talking like inches, and you would think that they have more back pain because of it. The research shows they actually have less back pain than the normal population. So it's not true that just because you have something that's causing you an abnormal limp, again, since the childhood. Now, if you told me that you had this limp or that the toe was a problem over the last 6 months and your back is really killing you, then I would start to link it more towards just that. But because you've had it for so long, it just seems to me there's something else going on, and I would want to look at the entirety of your spine. I'd want to watch you walk. I want to see how your hip moves. I want to see how your pelvis moves. I want to see how your spine moves, because all of those you can move independent of your foot, and therefore you can get a resolution to it and do exercises prior to your walking, prior to your running, and then immediately after your walking, immediately after your running, to calm down the back. And I would also advocate do everything you can to get your great toe moving. If it can't, you can definitely fuse it, but it's one of those, once you fuse it, it's never going to be different. You can't go back from a fusion. It's 100% going to be that way the rest of your life.
Rowan, thanks a lot for the call. And now we jump to New Paltz. No, we jump to Whitesboro. And Rich, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I had a quick question here about osteoporosis and these oscillating or vibrating machines. I was wondering, do you use them, or do you think they have any benefit for osteoporosis?
I think the things that have the most benefit for osteoporosis are proper nutrition, so making sure you have vitamin D, vitamin C, magnesium, potassium, calcium. And then I also think weight training, specifically lifting weights. So osteoporosis, you can actually stimulate the strength of the bone by loading it. So you have to do weight-bearing things. As far as the vibration things, I know they came up, and I honestly don't know much about them as far as research into osteoporosis. What I do know, and I'm 100% certain of, is that loading it with strength training helps. And we have a program in Saratoga. And one of the women that we have who's in her mid-70s had a DEXA scan 1 year after starting the program and has an increase in bone density from doing strength training. And so I am 100% sure that's the way to go. And having obviously someone show you the proper way to do lifts and things like that. But it would definitely be, you want to be loading it, weight bearing type of things.
Terrific. Yeah.
All right. Well, Rich, thank you very much. Now we go to New Paltz, and Mary, you're on. Mary, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me?
You bet.
Okay. Thanks. It's raining. So I've had persistent back pain, lower left side, for several years. I had a pretty significant injury where I kicked in the back 9 years ago. It seems to totally healed, but then a few years ago, the back pain came back, and nothing has helped it. I've done neurokinetic therapy, chiropractor, acupuncture. I tried a nerve ablation in my lumbar spine. I tried a cortisone shot in my SI joint. I think it is the SI joint. But none of these things are any good. I'm working with the therapist now, and it seems to be a little better, but I'm super active, and I'm in constant pain, and I just wonder if you have any ideas I haven't tried.
So a couple things. Number one, the approach we take is we have to evaluate how your joints are moving. You mentioned the SI joint, and the SI joint is not as common, I don't think, as people think it is. Number one, the SI joint is going to be pain on the SI joint and only the SI joint, so it won't go up to the lumbar spine at all, and it very, very rarely refers below the buttock cheek. And they've done studies where they provoke it. They intentionally try to aggravate the SI joint, and that's the referral pattern for it. That being said, we do a combination of things. So it always starts with mobility, and mobility to me means how the joints are working. And if you don't have full range of motion in the lumbar spine joints, you have to keep focusing on that until you get it. And there's four basic movements of the lumbar spine. It's bending forward, bending backwards, making your hips shift to the right, making your hips shift to the left. And when I say full range of motion, I mean that you can do all four of those movements with little to no discomfort and no limitation in the motion. If you don't and have never achieved that, that's why it's persisting. And until you achieve that, you're going to continue to spin around in a wheel here. Number two is, at this stage with this length of time, the muscles are so accustomed to tensing up to try to protect you that they're hypersensitive. So a small irritation will feel like a full-blown episode to you. That's why the movement's so important, because that's objective. You can't fake it. You can either move or you can't. And if you don't have that good motion, and you keep repeating this tension with the muscle, again, it's going to prolong it on and on and on. So it's all about the mobility of the joint and the mobility of the tissue. A lot of people are going to tell you it's about strength, and I'm going to tell you it's about the mobility first, and until you have 100%, that should be your total focus.
Mary,
once you have 100%, then strengthen.
Mary, thanks a lot. Well, we're about done here. We have about 15 seconds. Matt, I wonder if you can give us three good exercises for bone building. We had an email from Gregory. He walks 5 miles a day, still losing density to osteoporosis. What do you think?
Number one, invest in a weight vest and walk with a weight vest. That would be the best thing. He's already walking. So weight vest is going to load through the axial spine,
yeah,
and you'll get loading in the lower back and hip pelvis area. And then it would be squats, and I use terra squats, so just sit down, stand up.
Yeah.
And once you can do that, do it with the weight vest. And then from there, I would really want to have somebody give them proper instructions. But those would be in that number one and two that are safe to do.
Hey, man, thanks a lot for being here. Matthew Goodemote, splendid job, sir. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Ray. Talk to you later.
Support comes from Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 30 years. QFCC.com. At Nine Pin Cider Works, Albany hard cider from local apples, pizza, and small plates, serving lunch 7 days a week, starting at noon. Outdoor seating available, ninepincider.com. Once again, thanks to physical therapist Matthew Goodemote for being on with us today. Thanks for calling. Apologies if your call didn't get through. We will have Matt on again real soon. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. James Farrison screened the calls. Our producers, Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Well, I had mentioned the dark side of the moon earlier in the program, and of course there is not a dark side of the moon. There's a far side of the moon, and here to discuss that tomorrow when we talk about astronomy will be Bob Berman, and he will castigate me roundly for that, and I apologize in advance. We'll see you tomorrow.